Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen here with Louis D'Souza. Today is Monday, June the 29th, 2020. It's 4 p.m. New York time and wherever you are in the world. Thanks for joining us for another episode of LOA Today, your daily dose of happy. And I'm happy to report that there is actual progress with the release of the LOA Today app. We don't have all of it released yet, but I had a nice breakthrough over the weekend where the PC and Mac versions are concerned. So you can actually now download and install, if you're a Mac or a PC user who likes to listen to the show that way, you can actually go to the website, loatoday.net, and you'll see instructions on how to download and install the first version of the LOA Today app. Still working on the iPhone and Android versions. They are proving to be quite the challenge, quite more challenging than I thought they would be, Louis. And this whole project has been challenging from the beginning. It kind of makes me wonder, am I checking my vibration off enough? Because it seems like I come in and I get going and I really get excited and I'm so close. And then I run into a big boundary. And then I do things to get the boundary out of the way and I get another boundary. And then another boundary. And another boundary. And I'm not sure if this is just big level contrast or what, but I'm trying.
Something in IT world, it just sounds like IT. Yeah?
It does, yes. I just didn't know that programming was going to be this IT-ish. That doesn't make any sense to say that, but that's really what I thought. I thought it was going to be easier. I really did. I thought it was going to be easier. But nope, not the way it's going. But the good news is half of it is out.
Tell you from my perspective, from an IT guru in a different line, I'm impressed, because just even doing what you've done so far is something I wouldn't even attempt because of my knowledge.
Yeah, it's daunting. Daunting is the best word that I can think of to describe what it's like doing this stuff. And it's daunting every day. Mm. Every day I wake up and I say to myself, I can do this. I know I can do this. It's going to be a good day. I'm going to feel good. And then I get to work and, whoa, what the heck do I do next? That happens so frequently. But I keep chipping away. I kind of have taken the approach of eating the elephant. You know, the joke about eating the elephant, you do it one bite at a time. That's what I've been doing. Just one little bite here, one little bite there. Eventually the elephant's going to be gone, but I have no idea when. So, and also, I was telling you before the show, we had a special guest last Tuesday and Friday who was quite interesting. We had a guest who could receive, who could channel. He uses the word channel. Esther Hicks doesn't use channel to describe what she does. But he says he channels a collection of non-physical entities that he calls the stream. And it was fascinating. Both days. We did it for about a half an hour on Tuesday, about three quarters of an hour on Friday. And it's very much like hearing Abraham in a YouTube video or in a CD recording or, you know, one of those recordings that they put out. A little bit different in some ways, but the overall feel is very similar. And I know that the part that surprised me the most, especially on Tuesday, was when we started that show. We did the first half of the show just interviewing David Strickle, the guy who does the streaming, or the channeling, rather. And it was a great interview. And we were feeling very good, very high vibe. And then he hooks into the stream. And Dan Mangana and I both had the same impact of like, whoa, huge raise in vibration from where we were, which was pretty high vibration. And that surprised me. I didn't realize I was going to get that. The same thing happened on Friday. All those Fridays experience I described as being softer. It was like a gentle, kind of a rise. Mm. But either way, just the fact that there's a rise in vibration, I guess that probably happens with Esther too. But I asked Dave about it and he said, it happens every time that he connects and he gets the same experience. So I don't know. I hadn't thought about that one. Have you experienced anything like that?
I would say yes, but it's more on the inner, so, or out of body type scenario. So yeah, I've bumped into some incredibly wow energy individuals, where you get that feeling, woof, this vibration is vibrating very, very high frequency. And yeah, it does wow you.
especially if you're not ready for it. I think perhaps I was subconsciously ready for it on Friday because I'd experienced it 3 days before. Mm. But on Tuesday, when it happened, something happened that I'm not used to having happen to me. And that was all of a sudden I was faced with asking questions and I couldn't think of a single question for about 10 seconds.
I'd love to come on and have a chat.
Well, I have invited him back. He's checking his schedule to see what's going to work. I've suggested to him maybe trying to come on at least once to each of the other days so that you could experience him, Cindy, and so forth. So we're finding out what's going to happen there. And then I'm also suggesting that we try to go for a regular weekly schedule. So I haven't heard back what he can or prefers to do, but I know that he's been enjoying the visit, so I think he's going to come back. Yeah. So that's the good part. So
I like it when different people with different vibrations mix up the pot.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm looking for new ways, especially now with the app almost ready to be completely released. To me, that's like it's a milestone. That's an important one, not just because we reach it, but because from that point on, I see the show expanding in ways that I hadn't thought about expanding it in the past. And one of them is bringing on more and more people, getting more and more vibration, as you're saying, because that's what keeps things interesting.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. One of the topics we talked about on Friday was contrast, not surprisingly, and a theme that the stream voiced, very similar to what Abraham voices, is that there is no such thing as a wrong human experience, and that every human experience is expansive. Every human experience is valid. Every experience is useful. And that it's always seen that way by the person who's experiencing it once they pass back over into the other side.
Non-physical. Yeah,
into non-physical, which they call completeness. I hadn't heard that particular term before. But it makes sense. It raises kind of one of those ongoing questions. Okay, well, why do I have to wait until after I'm done with life before I finally feel like I'm actually living a good life?
But you don't. Once you've tapped into that meditative state where you go into the oneness even while you're here, or leave your body concept, which I explained to you wasn't leaving your body, it's just really raising your vibration and you can't do it. you can do it in this lifetime. I remember my mother saying to me, yeah, but you can only go to heaven once you're dead. I was saying, no, it's not a concept I agree with at all. So, you know, with all the experiences I've had, you know, you kind of get the idea that you can tap into it now and again while you're here.
Is that something that you have aspired to a lot, or is that something you kind of dabbled in and said, okay, I'm done with it?
I can never say I'm done with it, but you must understand that once you die, you're there, and then you choose to go and play the physical universe. So what you're really looking to do is to play with contrast. You're not looking to spend all your time in non-physical, otherwise you might as well pass on, you know?
Right.
So it's all about understanding that you did come here to play with this clay of making things with your thoughts. And then you start seeing life very differently. You start really appreciating it, I think, because you really are here to delve and play and mix with that messy contrast and get things stirred up. And that's why you're here. So. You know, the great desire of mine is not to spend all my time in non-physical or that high vibration state. And I know that high vibration state would never remain high if I'm in the physical. It will drop. It's the rules of the physical universe, you know. You will play with contrast if you're here. If you're alive, your mission on Earth, not complete.
And that mission includes diving into the contrast.
It very much includes, that is the main thing that expands you. So of course your non-physical really wants to play with it. Your fearful physical gets stuck in, no more of this. So yeah, it is, it's a, it's, it's, it's an adventure. But once you start understanding the Abraham Hicks teachings, or understanding that contrast is the teacher, and that when you go through what you don't want, it expands you, you become far bolder. You become far more resilient. And that's the word that the guy who teaches how to get rid of bullies says, you've got to become resilient.
It's a good word for a lot of life, I think. I mean, certainly I can see where it's useful when you're dealing with bullies, but it's useful in dealing with anything that comes along that's uncomfortable.
Absolutely anything. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the moment that you're resilient is the moment where it doesn't really matter all that much that it's uncomfortable.
Yeah. You don't really matter what other people think either anymore. You're just focused on, this is my goal, this is where I'm going, and let the chips fall where they may. And anybody who's got a chip against you or anything will vanish, because you're not focused on them anymore. You're not even thinking about them. You've focused on where you're going, where you want to do, and everything else just falls apart behind you, and you're just going and going and going. And I've seen those guys at school, you know, they start little businesses and they sell silkworms and all the rest of it, and they've bought their bike, and, you know, they've got their goal of getting skateboard next and all the rest of it, and they're just going and going, and you're just like, hey, I want to jump on board. Look how happy this guy is. Where is he going? I want some of it. I want some of it. So, you know, this is what I really love about, I think it's why society admires entrepreneurs so much, because they've really gone out and done this.
True. Yeah.
You know, they've really thought about what they want. They manifested, thought about what they want, manifest, thought about what they manifest. They've gained money. They've lost money. They've gained money. They've lost money. You know, and so they just become resilient, and they just move forward and move forward. And they don't care hugely what other people think about them.
I think also that as I look back at my own life, this viewpoint basically gives me a way to reframe it. I mean, we talk about that a lot, reframing the past. But I reframe it without having to actually reframe it. It colors the way I think now. So whereas I might have used to look back and say, well, you know, I kept losing friends, and I kept, losing connection with other kinds of people who weren't necessarily friends, but they were business associates, or they were associates of other kinds, or, you know, all the stuff I kept losing. Now I look back and say, oh, well, I was moving away from them. I was moving in a different direction from where they were.
Exactly. Your vibration was now so different, you couldn't attract them anymore.
Right.
You don't repel them. You're just attracting your new experience into you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they just fall by the way. And I had to learn that about old friends as well. I had to not a vibrational match more. That's why I'm dropping them. Not because we're not friends anymore or we're focused on anything else. It's just that your focus of where you want to go is in this direction, and then you will attract that, you know.
And I got a real good taste of it on the event of my 40th high school reunion, which I got talked into attending. I had no intention of going, but I got talked into it by one of my best friends from high school. So we went, and it just confirmed for me why I didn't want to go. But now as I look back on it, I realize it's confirmation of this. I didn't have anything in common with them. And I knew that I was going to walk into the room and not have anything in common with anybody there. And that's what happened. I mean, they're all nice people. Most of them. I can't say all of them, but most of them were. The ones in the room were, let's put it that way. And, it was enjoyable, nice socializing and so forth. And I had absolutely no desire to connect with any of them again. Because, like you said, the vibration was wrong. Just, I was on to different stuff from what they were on to. And I remember asking a few of them, so, what have you been doing with your life in the last 40 years? Oh, I've been doing this, and this. Oh, have you been enjoying that? Yeah. Oh, well, that's good. Nothing else to say.
Talking about friends, I want to say hello, Jeffrey. He says, hello, friends.
There he is. Hey, Jeffrey. Happy Monday to you, too. Yeah. That was one of the things, actually, that came out of the conversations with The Stream. It's such a name, The Stream.
I can roll with that.
Well, it's a little bit tricky when you're first trying to, engage in conversation, because you say, hi there, The Stream. No, that doesn't work. So I ended up calling them just Stream. So the name is Stream at this point.
Well, what's the guy's David who?
Dave Strickle. David Strickle, okay. Yeah.
Abraham Hicks. So we call them
Strickle Stream?
Joe Strickle.
Yeah, so anyway, when...
Because Joe's a good name, isn't it? It's not male or female.
Yeah, that's true, yeah. Yeah. Well, he's the one who picks the stream, though. So I'm kind of loath to change the name that he assigned.
No. It wouldn't change the name. Whatever they want, they get.
There's something, you know, onomatopoetic about Strickle Stream that, you know, got similarly sound.
It was just that I sat down and I thought about why they called themselves Abram Hicks. Mm-hmm. And I kind of worked it out that they stole the surname from the Hicks, from Esther and Jerry. And then Abram, of course, is quite a spiritual name, isn't it?
True, yeah. In fact, it threw me the first time I heard it because I was saying, what? Abraham from the Bible? What?
Yeah, Hicks. How does that work?
I just realized it should be reversed. It shouldn't be Strickle Stream. It should be Stream Strickle, but whatever. I have to run that one by him. But anyway, as I was saying, when I was talking to them about a variety of things, we were kind of exploring wide-ranging, you know, 35,000-foot view stuff about the nature of why we come here and what the contrast is all about and what are the various tools. He has this framework, I guess you'd call it, that he calls TIA or TIA, T-Y-A. And I don't remember off the top of my head what it stands for, but it's basically their equivalent to the tool set that Abraham teaches. It's their tool set for how to get into a high vibe place, stay in a high vibe place, focus on what you want and all that kind of thing. But in the course of discussing all of these, I remember, well, first of all, there was a question that I brought up on Tuesday. I'll go off on a sideline, sort of a tangent, and talk about that one for a second. It's the question that I had originally thought about asking Abraham back, a year or 2 years ago, when I finally went to my first Abraham workshop. And when I got there, I chose not to ask the question, but I decided to ask it this time, in part because, like I said, on Tuesday, I blanked out when I first had the opportunity to question. That was the first thing I could think of, so I went with that one. Mm-hmm. But the question had to do with magnets. And it basically goes like this. If you have two magnets, and a magnet, of course, has a north end and a south end, and you take the two north ends of the magnets and push them together, they'll repel each other. Mm. Which sounds kind of contrary to the idea of like attracts like. I mean, they're both north ends of magnets. They should attract, right? And so I asked, well, why does that happen? And he gave me a they. Well, yeah, I'm trying to correct my sentence in midstream, and it didn't work. Start that one again.
Confusing, I know.
They gave me an answer. Well, speaking of confusing, they gave me an answer that confused me. And my mind was boggling as I was hearing it. So I kind of, you know, put it on the back burner saying, okay, I'll have to go revisit that one by playing back the recording later on because I really have no idea what they just said to me. And it turns out that after the show, David went back to his circles and his followers and so forth. And he also did some of his own meditation on it. Because it turned into a really big topic. Apparently, I had touched a nerve. And a lot of people were really interested in, well, this can't be. You know, how is this possible? And so forth. And I don't fully grasp the answer that that was given to me. David tried to explain it again on Friday. And I can probably repeat the words of it, but I don't quite get the meaning of it. The words are that if you have two magnets and you're talking about the two north ends of a magnet, and you bring those two together, they have nothing new to learn from each other. There is no
exactly. New information. I was just about to say that. I can explain it, and I've said it on many, many occasions. A teacher's not looking for a teacher. A teacher's looking for a student. A student's not looking for a student. A student's looking for a teacher. So when you get the two positive ends, two teachers together, they will repel each other because then they're not a vibrational match. But a student who's looking for a teacher, obviously on the same subject, then they're a match and they go. Choo.
So it raises a question. What do we mean when we say a vibrational match? Because we normally think of things, you know, I want $100 and $100 shows up. So they sound like they're pretty much the same.
Like thing. And like, yes. 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 So vibrational likeness, what you want vibrationally, is something quite different usually to what we tend to think it is. So you send out a vibration of, I want this and this type of person. And then when you get that person, well, you think it's that person, then you actually feel repelled by them. And you're like, well, wow, I thought that's what I wanted. But the vortex has got a very clear idea what you want, but you may not be 100% clear about what's in that vortex and how it looks like. So that's the kind of confusion that I've come to, that I understand, is the way I understand it.
Well, you got it really clearly. I wish I could say I got it that clearly, but I still, some piece of that still isn't quite working for me. I don't know exactly what it is, but I'll just have to, I think I just have to sit down and kind of meditate on it for a bit. Cause so far I've given it, you know, 5 minutes of attention. That's about it, which doesn't quite work. By the way, Jeffrey, said he does his homework. He says, TYA or TYA stands for Trust Your Abundance. So that's what David's program is called, Trust Your Abundance, TYA.
Oh, right. Okay.
Oh, he also followed up. He says, I love and appreciate that answer. I feel I am a teacher and a student, continuously moving information and emotion through a chain web.
Ooh.
That's almost
Yeah, I like that chain web. The way I look at that chain web is a word I picked up from Spiritual Path. They call it the golden thread of wisdom, where the way I now look at it with Abram is you've got this wave, because what you want isn't, it's not a stable object. It's not just a 100-pound note, okay? You want to have a lot more than just a 100-pound note or a $100 note. You wanting what the dollar note would give you, etc. So there is a wave of things that go and float and move. And if you follow that web, that golden web of wisdom, you will start basically it's trusting your higher self, trusting your emotional guidance system. That's how it is. And then once you've trusted a little bit, then it gets better and easier and better and easier and starts flowing. And then you start really trusting it, and then bigger and bigger things come to you. And then so it flows, but it's like following a web. It's not as black and white. It's very different to that.
As I was sitting here listening to what you said, I got an image in my mind, and I think this may be Source trying to answer for me the question in a way that makes sense to me. The image was of anything, it doesn't matter what, some object or a person, place, anything, vibrating. And in the course of vibrating, I could imagine waves coming away from the thing that was vibrating. Steady waves happen, and they were waving at a vibrational frequency, so high vibration, they're really, really moving. Low vibration, they're moving slowly. And as those waves go out, they go out continuously, and they travel continuously. And then I imagine two of them, both at the same wavelength, both at the same vibration, both sending out waves to each other. And I ask myself, okay, what happens when those waves meet each other?
Mm-hmm.
When they meet each other, if they don't have any way to interact, they're going to bounce off each other. They're going to push.
Mm-hmm.
So what is it about a wave that is a vibrational match, as you termed it? And I realized the best way I can think of that is harmonics. If I have a wave that vibrates at, I'm going to get this frequency wrong, 526 vibrations per second, that's middle C, or somewhere in that vicinity, 562, I can't remember exactly what the number is. And then if I have another vibration that is twice as fast as that, it'll be an octave up from middle C. And if I have one that's, I don't remember what the exact interval is, but a certain amount toward that higher level one, I'll get something that's a fifth up. And we'll express it in terms of musical vibrations. And those are harmonically pleasing to each other. Mm-hmm. They are in harmony with each other. So I can now begin to visualize it as they don't have to be at the same vibration. They just have to be harmonically receptive to each other. I haven't taken it any further than that, but that's what my little image taught me.
So, yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the basis of the law of attraction is whatever you are wanting or not wanting is a vibration, and it'll draw similar vibration to it. So a student, a teacher looking for a student has got this image in his vortex of a student, and it's vibrating and it's pulsing. And then the student is out there looking for a teacher, and depending where the student is at vibrationally, they're going to come across that teacher that is of a similar vibration to what they want, not where they're at now, because otherwise we're not going to grow. So it's a lot to do with what's out in the vortex as opposed to who we are now.
Mm. Yeah.
And the teacher doesn't learn a lot about his subject when he teaches it, because he wouldn't be teaching it if he didn't know it fairly well. So he learns a lot more about how to teach and when to teach and how to say things to people and when to say things to people. So he's learning a whole different gambit of things, where the student is learning maybe what the teacher has to teach on a specific subject, and the teacher is learning on different levels. So it is the teacher's always learning, and the student's always learning as well, and also teaching. So it's kind of like a whole melting pot of stuff going on there. It's not just one person doing one thing and another person just doing another. There's a whole gambit of things going on in so many different levels. And then every subject that you bring to the teacher is on a different vibration, and the way any teacher explains any different subject, so it's on a different vibration too. So you've got this whole vortex of thousands of different subjects with different vibrations, with different reactions. And so how it all gets sorted out is the big miracle, you know, how we've created all this huge universe that does all this stuff. Just mind-blowing to me. It's
that part is awe-inspiring. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm still thinking about my harmonics analogy, and it may not even be an analogy. It may actually be literal, but I think about the two ways I usually define what law of attraction is. I usually take the Abraham Hicks version, that which is like unto itself is drawn. And then I take what I thought to be the shorter form, like attracts like. But now, through this conversation we're having, I'm realizing that the second form really isn't as accurate as the first form. Mm. The first form says a very precise phrase, that which is like unto itself, which is not the same thing as like attracts like. It sounds like it, but it's really not.
It sounds like it, but it isn't. No.
It's more like that which is harmonic to oneself.
It's why I get really annoyed when people put memes. I've learned that word now. they put up memes, but they shorten everything. And then because it's so short, it's out of context, and I just get so annoyed. You know, I had that one episode where I decided to slash a whole lot of memes apart. But, you know, if you have a look at any of Abraham Hicks's memes, they are like so long.
Oh, yes.
And then the full context starts coming in and you feel the appropriateness of it. But when somebody throws me these short ones, I get my back hairs just go straight up. It's like, nope.
Well, that's when you realize that the really long ones from Abraham Hicks are really the shortened versions.
Exactly.
yeah, it's already been compressed. It also occurs to me that I can take the same analogy about harmonics and apply it to situations of contrast. The harmonic part would be where it's something that I like.
So define the word harmonic for me, just so I'm clear.
Hopefully you know a little bit of music theory, so that if I say this...
Not really. Well,
are you familiar with the idea of a major chord?
Not really.
All right. I'd have to pick a piece of music.
I mean, I've heard major and minor, but that's about as far as it goes.
Major chords are happier. Minor chords are usually about sadness or strife.
Oh, vibrational differences. Right.
And then you also have different kinds of music that emphasize harmonic distortion. There was
Discordant music, which helps break up fixed mental thought patterns.
Yep. Discordant music, binaural beats are a form of that, actually.
Are they?
And okay. Also, if you look at rock and roll from, say, the mid-1970s on, where you had the heavy metal and the heavy distortion, a lot of the chording was straight major minor, but the distortion threw noise into it, for lack of a better term. It wasn't pure tonality anymore. Now it was just very jagged.
It was aberrating, yeah.
Yeah. So another way of achieving the same kind of thing without using notes that just sound uncomfortably wrong with each other. But the point is, all of them produce states of not high vibration.
Mm-hmm.
And this is where also I realized that what we call high vibration is in of itself a distortion of what the real meaning is.
Because it really is all relative. It's all relative to contrast.
Tell me what you mean by that before I agree with that.
Well, if I am a certain vibration and somebody of exactly the same vibration stood in front of me, the theory is you wouldn't perceive them.
Or in the context of what we were just talking about, we'd bounce off each other.
You would simply not be able to touch it because it is the same vibration as you. You wouldn't be able to literally, physically, or any level of your senses wouldn't be able to perceive it. And that's how they say the ninjas and, you know, certain gurus and masters are able to become invisible, because what they do is they mimic Walt's vibration because you're on the right. They'll mimic Louis's vibration on the left. And then the perception when you look at them, because there's no contrast, you would become invisible.
Hmm. Okay. I'll have to think about that one for a while too.
I know. It took me ages to kind of get my head around all that. That is an important teaching of a ninja, okay, because I was into martial arts for a lot, is the ability to sit in a corner of a room and not project any thoughts outwards, so that there's nothing for anybody to jar against. So you literally, and there's somebody stands there and actually looks in the corner. Because
that's not the same thing, though, is it?
No, that's different. That's different to what I was talking about just now, because these guys didn't have this full control of what a guru would be able to have. But, you know, I'm really talking stuff out of the air from that I've picked up over years and years of looking at different books and different martial arts. But, you know, I've done it on numerous occasions when I pull my thoughts away and just go blank in my mind. So, like, literally I'm meditating. I've got a blank mind. I can sit in a room and people don't notice me. It's just really interesting. It's fascinating. but as soon as you worry if they're looking at you or not looking at you or do anything like that, they pick you up instantly, you know. Or if you're sitting at a railway station or something, you can make yourself pretty much invisible to everybody else.
Well, that makes sense to me. I mean, maybe not so much in terms of vibration theory. I'm still working on that part of it, but in terms of just experience, I can certainly second how you can be in a place, and if you just sit quietly, no thought, you're not putting anything out there, I can see how people would ignore that. And I guess you can explain that vibrationally too, because if you're not emitting anything, there's nothing to interact with.
Exactly. There's no contrast. There's nothing to grab onto. Yeah.
Well, it's not contrasting or not. I mean, it could even be high vibration to your high vibration. There's still nothing to hook onto because there is no vibration. There's no vibration being given off there, or at least minimal amount of vibration and not enough to.
The fact that you've got a physical body and it's heat and all the rest of it, there is always some level of vibration. So
something.
But it's that intuitive aspect which you kind of blocking. You know, when you kind of feel somebody walking in the room before they're there, or, you know, or you kind of feel your cat's not far away from you. And, you know, you kind of know these things. But when you get to that place where you can just shut off everything, then people just aren't able to perceive you that easily. I mean, I was watching on the train the other day. I was blown away. I was just looking at everybody on the train. because I wanted to see them, because most of the time you're on a train, specifically in London, and you just block off everything. You create this little bubble around you and you don't see anything. So I was specifically looking at everybody, and this one woman, I could hardly see her. And I went back to her and back to her, and I went, because she was just like not there. And she was so serene, so peaceful, not interested in anybody or anything else. And she was just sitting there, and I was like, wow, you know, I almost missed you, almost as though you weren't there. And of course, I put a lot of my attention on her, but I even found it very difficult to put any attention on her because it was literally like she wasn't there. And that fascinated me. It was like, wow, you know, you always get these loud guys that jump out and you get excited about it. You know, you don't get excited, but you get drawn into looking at them because they're so contrasty. You know, they wear this blue hair or blonde hair or you know, and all the tattoos and these weird jackets and all these rings in their noses, you know, they stick out a mile. And, you know, they're shouting, look at me. But this woman was doing completely the opposite. And I was like fascinated, you know, because I think it's about the only person I've ever come across in my life so far that I saw that was not there almost, you know, somebody who's hiding in plain sight. And I was just admiring her. I was just had so much admiration. It's like, wow, you know, let me see if I can do that.
I'm just fascinated by your claim that you don't normally do that, that you get on a train in a bubble. Because every time I've gotten onto a train or any other kind of public transport, I'm always checking out everybody. Every single time, exception.
Well, the difference comes when you are going to work every single day in corporate London with the trains chock-a-block and everybody's on top of each other. If you do not shut down some part of you, you just get thrown around all over the place. Everybody's got their own vibrations. So the commuter individuals tend to learn that ability and learn it quite quickly, just to shut themselves off in their own bubble. Mm-hmm. It's a method which I perceive as kind of like a protection mechanism for them, so that they're not too drained when they get home with all these different people focusing on what they don't want, vibrations, you know, yes, flowing into them all the time, you know.
You do get a lot of that. That's true. Yeah. And you do have to know when to turn it off.
But when I first came to this country, I was like looking at everybody. It's like, wow, look, that person does this. And then once I did the commuting, you know, 9-to-5 type job in corporate London, then you just shut down. It's an instinctive, and I see everybody does it.
It's interesting on a couple of levels, because what you described is what I habitually learned how to do without realizing what it was I was learning how to do. I learned it quite a long time ago. But what I learned is that, yes, I usually do want to know about the people around me, and so I pay attention to them. But there are times, and it's usually with the people who are, like you were describing, the ones with the rings in their noses and, you know, the stuff that say, look at me. They're the ones that I didn't want to look at. And so what I would end up doing is deliberately averting my eyes from them and feeling them instead. Mm-hmm. And I, at the time, could not have told you why it was that I did that, other than to say it felt more comfortable to do it. What I
felt comfortable now, avoiding somebody who was shouting, look at me.
Well, comfortable may not be the right word. It felt better, I guess, is a better way of describing it.
It felt better not to give them what they want.
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah.
That's interesting. So when I get to people like that, what I do is I play the game. I suppose I do the opposite of what you're doing. I was like, wow, isn't that a nice ring? Or, oh, I really like that black jacket. Or,
oh, sure.
Ooh, those pink shoes, I'm not quite sure. And they're for me. And, you know, I really, you know, I'd even make a verbal comment to them. You know, just because they want to be seen, so let them be seen. You know, I'm happy to play the game.
For me, I guess that the feeling, the reason I would feel it, I would stop looking at them, but I would.
But feeling it is a way of seeing them.
It is a way of seeing.
It is a very clear and very powerful way of seeing them. So right. Yeah, it's not, but it's just on. You're just changing it from one level to another.
Right, right. That's a better way of saying it. That's exactly what would happen. And that felt better to me. I can't even tell you why it felt better, but it always felt more comfortable, more better. It just felt
I read
better.
An amazing book once, Walter. It was called The Lazy Man's Guide to Enlightenment.
Okay.
And if you never get a hold of it, I think you would probably like it. And you know, I know you have a lot, many books. It's very difficult to find anything that you'd like. But if you like illusions, you may like that one. It's a very short book. It's a little, you know, it's not a biggie. But the one thing that I walked away from it with was beggars, because he talks about just going up to them and smiling and giving them positive energy.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was in corporate London and I read this, you know, I was kind of avoiding those guys at that stage. So I decided to try out his little technique, and wow, it made such a difference. Don't have to give them money. Don't have to do anything. You just have to look at them, smile at them, and that's it. And yeah. Maybe say hello, you know. And that was a huge transformation for me on a subject that I had issues with.
Mm-hmm.
That changed quite drastically over the years.
I've used that same approach, particularly since doing the show, actually.
Mm.
Doing the show kind of encouraged me to start doing stuff like that. And you're right. I mean, it's actually fun to interact with people that way, especially when they're not looking for it, to give them a smile or a positive word or something like that, and watch their reaction. The reaction is always shock.
Yeah. Because they get so much of the opposite.
Mm-hmm.
That once they suddenly get something that is very different from the normal reaction, it's like it's a breath of fresh air, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it's what Abram teaches, you know, that nobody's broken.
Right.
And I don't look at any beggar or anything anymore as somebody who's broken. Just don't. I now see them as perfect where they're at. And that is really difficult for a lot of people to grasp all that. But once you do it, you can now respond with that pure positive energy, which is of immense value to them. Immense value.
It's taken me quite some time to get to that point, but I'm almost there. I mean, I can still feel a little bit of that negative pull that I used to feel in a big way, but just, I just feel differently now about them. And yeah, it's not totally, I haven't totally let go of that old stuff, but the new stuff is cool. The new stuff is seeing them as an actual individual human being rather than as a quote beggar or quote.
Exactly. Person. So the way I like perceiving it or playing it out in my mind is, how much time and effort and input have they put into their life to get to this position where they are now?
And it's considerable.
There's a considerable amount of factors that they must have put into place to get there now.
Right.
Isn't that amazing? Wow, a beggar on the street. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. And it is. It literally is for me now. Absolutely incredible. And you start appreciating anybody and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
You find it very difficult to dislike anybody anymore. You actually start seeing a lot more of the positive aspects of everybody around you, and you stop looking at the negative ones. It's just great. It is very liberating.
So how do you like to respond? This is a question that kind of harkens back to when my sister-in-law was on the program, but how do you respond to somebody who says, well, all that proves is that you've disengaged. You don't really care about people anymore.
Hmm. So that's a very common statement for anybody who goes down the spiritual detachment, Abram Hicks, Alloway, line. It's the common, dig. I'll use that word that they have. So the way I understood love before versus the way I understand love now is hugely different.
Okay.
Hugely different. And now it's a very detached love, and the detached love allows you to love a huge amount, massively more than the other love which I used to have. So it's a very complex thing. It sounds very, you're saying one thing and then saying another.
Mm.
But it allows you to appreciate the whole so much more. You wake up in the morning and you see everybody in such a beautiful light, and you're not criticizing them. And that is where you get to. So is it better to have all these, you know, contrasting ideas or sitting in your little corner where this is right and this is wrong because that makes me human? You know, you can play that game if you want. I don't mind. But I've learned that it doesn't help open my heart. It doesn't help free me. It doesn't help allow me to fully understand where you are and to truly help you. So it's the difference between what I've seen a lot of people do is that, you know, they call them Mother Charity, or that, you know, they're always helping other people. But mm-hmm. in the end of the day, are they really helping them, or they doing what they think the other person needs, but not really what the other person needs? So it's kind of that difference where you kind of feel and you say the right things at the right time, and people just glow and they open up and it works for them. And I've seen that so many times in my life that it's where I'd much rather be than that whole contrasting, I care so much environment that a lot of people want to argue for. So I will just let them argue for it and continue on my way. It's just nothing more than that.
Just don't buy into it. That's all.
It's not even right buy into it. I'm buying into my new one so much that mm-hmm. one doesn't manifest too much. Yeah. You know, the idea of not pushing against anything is very clear with me. I really, really see it pop up very quickly if I start pushing against anything. It just, it's in my life. And, you know, and you see the absolute fruitlessness. What's the word? There is a word.
Not sure what you're thinking of, but.
Fruitlessness. You see the fruit. I'm tongue-tied today. The fruitlessness of that focus. When you're focusing on what you don't want, it really doesn't help you, brings down your emotion, brings down your vibration, and then you're not able to be in a position of helping that individual anymore. So, you know, you just see the fruitlessness of it. Just totally.
Is it fruitless, though? Because it does produce fruit. It may not be the fruit that you or I would want to produce from it, but it does produce. I mean, if it didn't, they wouldn't keep doing it. I
completely agree with you. So, and this is what Yona was getting at a lot with the title of the book. We're going to the point where you're now looking at the negative contrast, not as negative anymore, but as expansion. And once you get that, changes everything. Mm-hmm. You know, so, but it's also clear you don't focus on that anymore. You're now focusing now on the expansion.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So you're not going there anymore. You're not digging in there. You're not amplifying it. So the law of attraction will amplify it. You're not focusing on it. So the law of attraction won't amplify it anymore. But you are not saying it's bad, evil, terrible. You're saying it was a beautiful expansion experience and it really helped me go here.
Which is what's happening with the beggar on the street, and it's happening with the protester, and it's happening with the politician.
Exactly.
And it's happening with the newscaster, and it's happening with the actor on stage or the actor in the.
And it's happening millions of times with me every day.
Yeah.
It's playing with the contrast.
It kind of gives me a real reason, like I needed one, but it gives me a real reason beyond the obvious reasons for not treating it as a right experience or a wrong experience, but because boy, you can get tripped up on right or wrong really, really quickly if you stick to it in that kind of scenario. Because the moment that you're thinking right or wrong,
just jump on Facebook and you will see.
Yes, well, there is that too. Yeah, you'll find it really fast. But even so, even if you aren't talking about it, or even if I'm not talking about it in terms of, okay, I'm going to interact with somebody on Facebook and I'm going to say something and they're not going to like it and they're going to say this, that, or the other thing about it. If I just treat it as I am deciding to do this, I'm deciding not to do that. This person is deciding to do this. They're deciding not to do that. They're deciding to do this and not that. If you just think of it in those terms and limit it to those terms, it actually becomes confusing to add in right and wrong is what I'm trying to say. It can
absolutely
muddies up the whole approach.
The whole thing is, when I see Walt saying this or doing this and believing it, it's perfect for Walt.
Mm-hmm.
But it may not be perfect for me, but I appreciate that it's perfect for you now.
Right.
And there's that level of acceptance which comes with it, which gives you that level of detachment, which gives you the saying that Abram says, nothing's ever going wrong. You know, there's nothing wrong with the planet. There's nothing wrong with anything. The only thing that would be good is if you focus a little more on what you want, because then you'll manifest it. So you get to what I used to know in my old world before Abram, I used to call it spiritual detachment. And I truly didn't understand it in those terms and at that stage, to be honest.
What do you call it now if you don't call it spiritual detachment?
I call it clarity on how it works, how the universe works, as opposed to anything else. It's just clarity. It's just understanding how it works and working with it as it works and not as you thought it worked,
mm-hmm.
Which has been a transformational process for you, and now you're just running with the new program and off you go. So again, it's not me that uses this word detachment. It's people that are kind of putting holes in or pointing fingers at the law of attraction. I've heard a lot of people saying, oh, my spouse is very detached now, etc. But, you know, I'm looking at my wife, who's taken on board a lot of the Abram Hicks teachings, is running with it. We're now on a very similar page from different perspectives. But the level of relationship that we now have is so much higher than it used to be.
Mm.
It's completely, completely, completely transformed. It's now not on that level anymore. It's on another level altogether. And the appreciation I have of having a partner who is on that level, who understands, who is not blaming me for anything anymore, is now realizing she creates her own reality. And the kids have been brought up in this environment. It is to me amazing. It's just,
I'm with you.
Phenomenal.
That's exactly the experience that Louise and I have had over the years. Mm. And I continue to marvel at it. I remember shortly after I met her. Now, this was after a 20-year dry spell, right? I had no success in relationships for 20 straight years. And then I met her, and then everything worked from that point on. And basically what happened was I finally met somebody who wasn't going to play games with me, who just wanted to interact with me as I was, who I wanted to interact with just the way she was. And that worked. And I remember all of the people saying, including people who attended our wedding, who said, it will never last. And they said it with conviction. I'm pretty sure in at least probably most of the cases, they were saying it because that was their experience. Mm-hmm. They had had either themselves or people they were close to who had had short-term relationships. They got married. They got divorced years later. It was just to their way of thinking, it was the pattern of life.
Hmm.
And I remember at the time thinking to myself, you really don't understand us at all, do you? Are you really my friend? Do you know who I am?
You know, my answer would have been, well, it would have been, you know, if it doesn't last, doesn't last. I'll just,
well, there was that too.
I'll just play the game until it's not playable anymore.
When we actually invented our own vows, we refused to take religious vows because none of the religious vows that we'd ever heard were anything we wanted to agree.
We used something very unique as well.
Yeah. So we
there's no ways I would say till death do us part.
We didn't say anything close to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was more along the lines of let's just go for however long it'll go. And not worry about it too much. I mean,
that's almost exactly what Abram says you should say.
Yeah.
Let's try it out and see how it goes.
Yeah. And I think both of us went into it knowing it was going to be for life, but we didn't feel like we needed to pledge each other to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if it didn't work out that way, then that was fine. But we were pretty sure it was going to work out that way. So let's go for it and see what happens. And that's exactly the way it played out. But as I look back on the people who were saying it wasn't going to last, and I look at my reaction to them, I realize that their experience and my experience, their focus and my focus, their vibration and my vibration were quite different.
Mm.
And indeed, the people who said it are people I am no longer in touch with. Going back to what we talked about earlier,
Absolutely.
We just went in different directions, is all. Nothing wrong with it.
I had a young guy who was quite close to me at one stage, and he said, oh, we haven't seen each other for a while, and, you know, I don't know if we ever will, and all the rest of it. And I said, don't worry about it. Things just have a way of working its way out. If we don't, it's meant to be. If we do, we do. And I said, and his mom came to me later and said, no, that was the best thing you could say to him. You know, it really helped him.
Good. Yeah. That's fabulous. Hey, Jeffrey raised a question. I wanted to make sure we got to it. It ties into, actually, he raised a couple questions, but they tied into what we were talking about earlier in the program, which is pretty similar to what we're talking about here. He says, when we reach levels of new understanding, do we open or activate new channels, new ways for information to come through, as in visions, thoughts, ideas, dreams, and human teachers? And then the second thing he asked is, so we know that we are attracting that which is like ourselves. How are we all alike in this reality, in this moment? So a couple of questions there.
Okay, let's talk about the first one. We reach new levels. So when we say to ourselves we're reaching new levels, let's use the vibrational scale.
Okay.
So let's say we're usually hovering around frustration, and we now go to I don't care. So we've moved from one to another. So I'm using this as an average. Now, every subject, Jeffrey, is going to be different. So if you're talking about relationships, it might be one. You might go from hope to expectation. And when it comes to money, you might be going from anger to frustration. So when I'm using this average, it's like an average out of who you are as a human. So you're just saying you average it out. And let's say we're going from I don't care to hope. So when you reach that general vibration that is higher, yes, you are going to not open your channel so much, but you are now vibrating something that's a different frequency. And yes, you will be drawing what's in that frequency to you. So yes, and it will come in the form of visions, thoughts, ideas, dreams, etc. So one thing we really need to be clear about is what is new and right for us, and what is the old programming. And the way you know it, you know, the way you're going to be moving forward is when you feel excited, you feel that it's maybe a little bit beyond your reach. You maybe you are feeling good about it for a while. Now the doubt will kick in and it'll destroy it. It's happened to all of us. Mm-hmm. So what you need to understand is when you have these experiences is to run with them, grab them with hand, sit there, don't care if you can manifest it or not, don't care if you got the experience or not, don't care about anything. You just sit there and you milk it. You sit there and you say, wow, that was a good feeling. Ooh, I can just play with this. I don't have to manifest anything. The universe and law of attraction can do everything. I'm just going to sit there and I'm going to think about it. And I'm going to think about it in a way that I'm excited and I love. And so you go on about that and you just milk it and milk it and milk it. And then the universal law of attraction, once you've got enough momentum going, is just going to start drawing that to you. So those are the important things to know about new levels of understanding. The next question, which is attracting that which is like ourselves. How are we all alike in this reality? Well, we're not alike. We all live in our own universe. So I wouldn't worry about any of that. But It really takes you a while to get that even though I'm speaking to Walt, I'm still thinking of how I'm going to answer him. I'm still in my own bubble 99% of the time, and we're just touching. We're like ships in the dark, just touching each other. And we're not, you know, Walt is just a tiny piece of my world, which I have allowed in for short periods of time. And that's the way it is. And it's completely the opposite way. Walt is in a similar position with me. You know, I'm sure we like to say, oh, I really love my wife and I think about her all the time and blah, 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 blah. It's just not true. It's like I'm thinking about her so that I can do something for her so that she will like me more, which always goes back to me, 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 me. And
plus there's also things like, you know, doing work and doing activities around the house and playing with the kids. And since we can only focus on one thing at a time, none of that time is spent focused on her.
Mm. Exactly. And, you know, when you're at work or driving or something, you have to put a little bit of consciousness out in keeping you and your world alive and moving forward. So you really need to grasp the concept, or I find it's very useful to grasp a concept. You do not need to, or do not have to believe anything I say. It is very valuable to understand that you do create your own universe and you do live in it. Then once you get there, once you really understand that, you can start really carving out your life. You really start being able to slash these things that are of no value to you by not slashing them at all, by just focusing on where you're going, clearly going there, focus, moving, and then bang.
Going back to his first question, he also followed up by saying, do we open or activate new channels? And the answer is, of course, all the time. That's part of what it is to be a conscious creator. Every time that you focus on something that you've decided to focus on, whether it's something you like or you don't like, you're opening up another channel to something else. You're getting new thoughts in to reinforce the thing that you were just thinking about. You're getting manifestations. Of course, channels are opening. They're opening all the time.
So Jeff, just break down the word channel. Channel means a vibration. Always break everything down to vibration. Are you creating a new vibration? Yes, you're creating a new vibration. And of course, that new vibration will be reacted upon by the law of attraction. The law of attraction will find other vibrations that are similar to that, start drawing them towards you. So just change a lot of these words which we bander around, put them into the form of vibration, and you'll find it makes life a lot easier.
So he added one final question. This is a good way to sum up the show, I think. He says, if we're not alike, how did we attract each other?
Again, it's the master-student thing. A master is a very different person to a student, but the master wanted a student. So what was in his vortex and what was in the student's vortex match.
And it's not just masters and students. It's
Of course it's not. Yeah. That's just giving you an idea, yeah. One idea of millions and millions and millions of parameters. Yeah.
Yeah. It's any kind of combination. It's any kind of.
I've always used that one for some reason or other. I suppose I should change it a bit. I just like using the idea. It just really makes sense to me. So I could sit down for a few seconds and create a million different scenarios. It doesn't have to be master student at all.
Right. Right.
It can be marriage, partner, relationships. It can be anything.
Sure. Yeah.
Your relationship to money, everything. They're all relationships.
Doctor, patient. It could be. Friends or opponents in financial circles. It could be fill in the blank. It could be dance partners. It could be people who meet on the street. It could be it's any combination. It doesn't matter what the combination.
Great question, Jeffrey. What if you wanted to create other students? So now you're putting into your vortex, I want more friends.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than saying student, you're saying, okay, I'm at university, so I want some more friends. Mm-hmm. And then you're putting out the vibration of friends, and then you get friends. So,
yeah. Or if you're not at the university, it doesn't matter where you are in your life.
No, it doesn't matter. Again, arbitrary location. Right. Yeah.
It's really...
But then you start understanding, when you get this, well, this is when you start understanding how much of a non-physical part of you have.
Yes, that's true.
Okay, you start seeing the separation between where you are and what you want, and how that what you want that hasn't manifested yet is a huge vortex of stuff that is sitting there twirling around, as Abram would put it.
Yeah, I don't have to be quite as afraid of that Mack truck that's swimming around in the middle of it anymore.
Yeah, I remember that.
Good stuff. Well, I have to say, I think we matched what Dave Strickle had to tell us on Tuesday and Friday. This is very, very good. So we'll have to have him in sometime so you can talk to him, though. I think you're going to enjoy it.
Oh, I would love it. Absolutely.
I mean, he likes to have challenging questions. He likes to have
good,
interesting.
Bring him on.
And I figured, wow, if there's anybody who can give him interesting questions, it's Louis D'Souza. So we're going to set that up. We're going to make that match happen. In the meantime, thank you very much. I want to remind people who are not yet subscribed, hey, those of you who use PCs and Macs as your way to listen to the program, you're a very small minority of our listenership, but you are there, and you can now download the app. It is now ready for you. Just go to the homepage, loatoday.net. You'll see it has been changed to a link that you download. There's even an instruction page there you can click on to walk through step by step how to load it up. I wish it was as easy as it's going to be once the Android and iPhone solutions are going to be there, because they'll just be, you go to the Play Store or you go to the App Store, search for
LA. But there is an App Store for Microsoft. Have you got it in there?
There is one, yes. I've deliberately not put it in there yet, okay, because of the same reasons why I'm dealing with Android and Apple issues at the moment. I wanted to at least get the app up where people could get it, you know, without having to wait a few months. But, you know, if you are a Mac user or a PC user and you listen to the podcast via that device, you can install the software. And for those of you who are waiting with bated breath for the Android and iPhone solutions, they are coming. They're very, very close. In the meantime, if you're not subscribed, just do it the old-fashioned way. Those instructions are still available on the website. Just go to loatoday.net. It will detect that you're using either an iPhone or an Android, and it will show you how to connect in. And then, as a subscriber, once we do have that app released for the iPhone and once we do have that app released for the Android, you'll hear about it. You'll be able to go to either the App Store or the Google Play Store and download the LOA Today app. And that will be the way to listen from this point onward. But make sure you're a subscriber one way or the other. And make sure that you tell a friend to tell a friend, because we want to keep passing the word, especially once this app comes out. That's going to make it so much easier for people to listen to the podcast. We want to be able to spread that word as much as possible, and you help us to do that. So thank you, Louis, for all of your insights and teachings.
Thank you, listeners.
Appreciate it very much. Thank you, Jeffrey, for your questions. Thank you especially to our podcast listeners as well. We'll see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.